Hello, and welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, I'm your host, Evan Sider, and joined by my co-host, Brendan Clean. You could follow me on Twitter at eSider. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. Also, make sure to follow us on our Twitter page at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support there is very much appreciated. We're joining you right after the buzzer, maybe 2 minutes after the final buzzer sounded in Chicago. Somehow, some way, the Suns lost that game. They're now 0-8 on the road, 3-14 on the season. 124-116 was the final score tonight. We'll get into it, Brendan, with our flagrant foul and our free throw, our usual recap segment, which you guys should know by now. But I guess I'll throw it your way, Brendan, because I think there's been some bad losses this year. There's been some really ugly losses as far as blowouts go. But I think really encapsulating everything so far this season, I think this is the worst loss of the season.
Really? Not that I think this is an excusable way to lose a game, obviously, being up by five, playing a team that really doesn't have much more talent than you, if they even have more. But I mean, we've seen some really huge deficits. So why do you think this one was worse?
I think just when you look at Chicago, and I know you'll touch on here in a moment, but 56.8 field goal percentage for them, 44% from three. The defense was abysmal tonight. And then also Igor Kokoschka's rotations, I thought, were really, really head scratching at some times. He played Isaiah Kanan and Jamal Crawford in the second half multiple times, and he kept those guys in until it was pretty much out of reach at that point. Booker and Bridges back into the game about 3 minutes left. I just think there was just the defense, Igor's decision-making. I feel like all that wrapped in together is probably why I'd say that.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely hear you. I think it's always worse to lose to bad teams, especially in an ugly way. And I think blowing a lead that even was a little bit higher than five, obviously, that it was five at halftime, but that was due to a last second shot and a run right to close the half. So I agree with you on how bad it was. I just, maybe I tend to think the huge blots. I think honestly, though, to me, the Celtics was still probably the worst one. That was just craziness. It was like this times two for me, but I will start with the free throws just to get a little deeper here on the game. And if we're going to start with some good, which is usually what we try to do with the free throws, if possible, I mean, to me, the easy one that sticks out, there were a lot of guys who did their thing despite the ugly numbers for the Bulls. And I think DeAndre Ayton's passing will be the specific for me. I think it's been not just tonight, but I would say one kind of funny thing that's gone on the last maybe 2, 3, 4 games has been that I think his passing has been even better despite his assist totals, which were so high early in the season, going down a little bit. So even though you might look at the numbers and think he's not been as good, as productive in that area as he's been, as he was early in the year, I think he has been even better. So you saw it a little bit, and Igor Kokoschkov talked about it, making plays on the short roll, catching the ball on the pick and roll and passing to the corner, passing to an open shooter, doing the same thing out of the post when he's getting so much defensive attention in the post. We've seen that time and again with really defenses not only keying in on Devin Booker, but keying in on DeAndre Ayton when he is in the game, when he has the ball, knowing that it's even easier to make him tired and take him out of the game if you do it the right way and provide pressure on him. So he was good finding ways out of that tonight, and he has been for a while. So 5 assists for him, and I think he's been a really big plus on the offense in a way that he wasn't early in the season when it was kind of, is he scoring or not, and that's about it.
Here's what really confused me, though, with Ayton, though, Brendan, and it's he only took 5 shots in the second half. Should he be taking more than that?
Yeah, I've been wondering about this a lot because I know you made this point when we were talking about what they need to do, what the Suns need to do to keep winning in the show last week, and I think obviously you'd like him when he's playing this well and being as efficient to get a little more shot attempts, be a bigger part of the offense. But the problem is he's really not a shot creator at this point. Most of his shots are coming from easy looks around the rim when he's getting the ball fed to him, or some mid-range stuff. That's about it. And you can see it in his free throw totals, because that's another big thing I've been wondering about is like, why does he never ever get to the line? That's been a really weird and obvious weakness for him. Plenty of games where he doesn't even get above 2 free throw attempts, which is what he had tonight. And I think it's just because he's really just not a post player right now. He's huge and he has such technical skill in a lot of different ways, but he doesn't have the footwork or the strength in the post to create shots for himself. So if he's not doing that and you don't really want him just bombing from mid-range, very few guys can create efficient offense doing that. It's really tough to imagine where those shots come from.
Yeah, that's a good point. And really almost all of his shots been off assists this year. So it's not surprising. Like you say, he can't create all for himself at the moment. But for me, for my first free throw, I'm actually going to go to Ayton's backup here. And that's Rashawn Holmes, who I think if there's a priority list for the Suns this offseason, I think in the top 10, maybe there's a laundry list of things the Suns need to fix with this roster. But I think one of those is actually keeping Rashawn Holmes around for the long term, because this guy's always just energy, energy, energy. He's nonstop. He had 14 points tonight, 6 rebounds, 2 blocks, 7-11 field goal attempts, but that was in 15 minutes. Like that, he reminds me a little bit of Montrezl Harrell. Like he's kind of like this super energy guy, and he's just a guy who, whenever he's on the court, seems to elevate everyone around him.
Yeah, and I think he's getting a lot better at some of the little floaters and flip shots around the basket that make it easier for a guy that, especially, he's not the strongest, most guy down there. He's obviously big, really long, but doesn't have the strength that some centers are going to have, but he's able to make some of these weird angle shots that just kind of come out of nowhere and go in. I think that's really going to help him if he can get the, you know, just the accuracy kind of in the paint, but not right around the rim. That's going to help him a lot. And he's come along doing those quite a bit over the last few games too. So yeah, I mean, he's even in losses, he's always kind of been, he's probably been one of the more consistent players on the team, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. I think outside of Mikal Bridges, ironically enough, I was doing some stat information during the game because I was curious, because Holmes and Bridges had a really nice stretch together. And those two guys, minimum 50 minutes together, just for a threshold there. Those two guys have an 84. It's going to probably go up higher after tonight's really bad 124 points to the Bulls. But they had an 84.5 defensive rating together, and that's the best on the team minimum 50 minutes. And I think that kind of shows, the eye test shows it, but the advanced numbers also show that those two guys are always out there actually trying on defense, which is nice to see.
Yeah, that's interesting. I wonder, I mean, a lot of it might just be that they're playing against bench units, so they're going to be a little better than, like, you know, Booker and Ayton playing against superstars. But that is, you know, it, as the minutes go up, it will be interesting to see if that keeps up, because obviously those are the two most, some of the most energetic, impactful guys. So, you know, like you're saying, the eye test kind of backs up that they're impacting defense quite a bit. But my second free throw, to kind of go in the positive direction, or try to again, I think it's really kind of bleak after those two guys. I mean, I think TJ Warren deserves some consideration because he was so, you know, just did his usual thing, 20 points again tonight. Maybe I'll just go with him because I think, you know, he does on nights like this when so many things go wrong, to see him kind of come in and do his normal thing. He got a little bit on the wrong side of the Jabari Parker battle on defense some of the times. It's funny, those guys too on the court together, it's like that Spider-Man meme where they're just pointing at each other. They look physically almost exactly the same. That was kind of funny to watch today. But aside from Jabari having a pretty solid night, almost a triple-double kind of out of nowhere, I think, and some of that was just hot shooting for the Bulls, so he's passing to shooters who just are nailing crazy shots. But for Warren to be able to score, he made some clutch shots. He made a three really with like a minute and a half left that kind of made you wonder if the Suns were going to get back into it. He's been really clutch, especially as a three-point shooter all year. So that continued tonight, and obviously his pretty consistent, it almost looks exactly the same night tonight, that stat line. 8 of 15, 8 of 16, 20 points, making a couple threes. He's just become such a machine, and I think that you can't go a night without mentioning it.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. And by the way, if you guys didn't know, TJ with his 2 threes tonight, already through 17 games, he's already has a career high in three-pointers made, which is insane. But for me, I guess I'll go here to my second free throw, and it's Jamal Crawford. And really quick, before I even go into my point, I think that next game, if Igor wants to change up his rotation and keep the point guard in there, at least a steady playmaker alongside Booker, take some pressure off him, I think you should start Jamal Crawford or Isaiah Cannon. I know it hurts the bench unit there, but he had 21 minutes tonight, 16 points. He really kept them in the game in the third quarter, early fourth quarter, before the wheels kind of fell off there at the end. But Jamal Crawford slowly but surely is figuring out Igor's system, I think, and he's proving to – he's taking some here, like some questionable shots here and there, but I think he's still trying to pick his spots on this team. But once he figures it out, I think he's – I'm slowly but surely coming around the Jamal Crawford side. I think tonight was another good game for him.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's being a little more patient than he was when he first got to Phoenix. He was kind of taking control of the offense a little too much when he first got here. We all saw the two-man game with Tyson Chandler go horribly wrong on a few different nights, not lose the game, but, you know, just kind of suck the life out of the offense. And he's completely rotated 360 degrees from there, or 180 degrees, I guess, from there to really become mostly a positive on offense. Obviously, the defense is always going to be a problem, but making a lot of clutch shots at the end of the clock. He had that crazy chuck up from the left corner in the fourth quarter from three that went in, and another one from two at the end of the shot clock in the first half. So making those kinds of shots is just something that no one outside of Booker really can do on this team. And it does have value, especially when you have so few other options.
Before we go any further, guys, I want to tell you really quickly about our Locked On NBA Net Twitter account. If you're not already following it at Locked On NBA Net, it is our database, so to say, for every writer, me, Brendan, David Locke, the rest of the Locked On Sports Network gang that covers the NBA. You can see all their tweets live, right as it happens, all these updates. Really, almost every game, every practice, we have a Locked On member at the game. I know you guys know Brendan and I are at most of the Sun games with immediate podcasts and live tweets from there. But if you want to get outside of Phoenix Suns, make sure you follow at Locked On NBA Net, because it's quickly becoming one of, I think, the more valuable resources if you want to get instant NBA news and really some great opinions around the network. I think you guys should follow Locked On NBA Net.
All right, I will start with the flagrant fouls, and there are a lot to choose from on a night like this, as we talked about. Just an 8-point loss, but easily a game the Suns could have won, and I think the biggest culprit for not winning this game, even on the road, is just the defense overall. Just you can't – and I do want to put this caveat in that I think the Bulls just – made some incredible, crazy three-point shots. Antonio Blakeney, Archie Diakono, Justin Holiday, all three of those guys made at least one or two each that were contested deep threes. And, you know, that's really tough to deal with, really tough to move on from and overcome as an opponent, as the Suns were today. But this is the thing the Bulls can do. I've watched them only a couple times, I feel like, this season, but both of the times I remember watching them, they just make these kinds of shots. They have players on this team that aren't afraid to take them and can make them. So that's part of playing the Bulls. And I think that the Suns let that cascade into a really just terrible night on defense. 57%, 56.8% from the field, 44% from three, let them get to the line far too often, fouled 20 times. Again, Devin Booker was in foul trouble. Mikal Bridges as well. Those two were both in foul trouble in the last game too. So, you know, just some of the same problems cropping up combined with the Bulls making some tough shots, and then Zach LaVine's clutch playmaking and scoring at the end of the game to take it home. Just kind of throughout every level of defending, they kind of failed in tonight. And, you know, they put up a really solid offensive showing, the Suns did. And you'd like to not waste games like that with how much of a problem the offense has been on some nights. To score 116 and still lose, I think, is a really big kind of a disaster for the Suns at this point in their season.
I'm sure you probably noticed this too, Brendan, but on those three-pointers you mentioned with Archie Diakono and Blakeney and Holiday, a lot of those threes tonight I feel like were just lazy contests. Like, guys were just jogging to get the threes. They were like not really putting their hands up. I saw a moment from Josh Jackson. He had a really lazy closeout against Holiday, and it just took him a little too long to get there. He didn't really put his hands up that much, and it was just an easy three for him. That's just one of many examples off the top of my head that I know of. But did you notice the same thing?
Yeah, I think I do notice those quite a bit. And I think some guys are freelancing. Booker is a big culprit on that, where the ball moves around the court and he knows where his man is, I think, a lot more than it looks like, because of how bad it can get. Ugly finishes and cuts and open shots that he lets up. But I think it's just because he feels like he can kind of move around and recover. And the truth is he just can't. He rarely gets back to those guys. Booker's just one, though. I think the other thing would be switching. The more that they switch and they don't, if they don't do it incredibly in a disciplined way, they're going to be able to give up those shots because those rotations just aren't going to be quick enough. A guy recovering back to the guy he's switching onto, if that doesn't happen immediately and in a, you know, efficient way with kind of how much can happen at one time when you start to switch, it's just going to result in some of those shots. So I think it's a combination of a lot of things, but yeah, I definitely notice it too.
I guess for me, for my flagrant free throw, I kind of alluded to it at the beginning of the show, but for me, it's going to be actually Igor Kokoschkov. I thought those rotations were just a little confusing tonight with some of the guys, especially Isaiah Kanan. I think he's played way too long. And I think if anything, like I said, Jamal Crawford makes a lot more sense starting here moving forward. And I think if not, I think Booker and Bridges should be starting together. I think Mikhail proved again tonight why he should be starting in the starting lineup. But some of the rotations Igor had are just confusing to me. I know you tweeted some of that too. I know a lot of Suns fans are wondering about the rotations, but I think Igor is still trying to figure it out. But I think he also needs to realize, like, when momentum's happening, he needs to, like, change things up, because he left Crawford and Cannon in there way too long. Like I mentioned earlier, it ballooned to almost a double-digit lead when it was, like, about a three-point game. And then he kept Booker and Bruce on the bench until about 3 minutes left. And it, from there, it was too little too late when they were down by nine when they entered into the game, even though Booker had a really good stretch for the final next few possessions. But I just think something has to change with the rotation, Brennan. I know Igor's trying his best to maintain it, but I think one of them has to be Isaiah Cannon not playing much at all anymore. I just don't see why he's playing still. And the second being that he just needs to be consistent. I think Josh Jackson needs more minutes. Mikhail obviously needs to be starting. Rashawn Holmes probably needs more minutes now, but it's a balancing act for Igor. I imagine that. I mean, it's only his 17th game ever being a head coach, but I think outside of the Boston game, like we talked about earlier, I think that this was might have been his worst coach performance of the season.
Yeah, there's a whole lot to unpack. I think that's been the one constant thing where, you know, some of it, of course, we can point to many, many mistakes by the players. And that's the biggest problem, is consistent turnover, foul, and efficiency problems, not getting to the line. There's a whole bunch. But from the other side of it, aside from the point guard situation, the biggest consistent problem night in and night out, I think, has been just inconsistencies. The thing is, too, and I think you're kind of alluding to the same thing, is like Igor would be the first person to tell you that this is an issue, and that he knows that it isn't consistent, and that, you know, I think ideally he would have a pretty set lineup, but between DeAndre Ayton getting tired, just straight up getting tired, and Isaiah Cannon, Josh Jackson being two guys that you really never know from night to night if they're even going to be playable. You can't play seven guys, and the number of players on this team that are unplayable grows by the week. So, I mean, there's maybe only seven or eight players on this team who should even be in any NBA rotation. The fact is they're in this rotation. So I think a lot of it is that. But the other thing is there is fixable stuff. So this has been a problem since I mentioned it in the Dallas game. And I said, okay, probably foul trouble in that one. Let's see how it goes moving forward. A lot of nights since then, there's been several minute stretches where both Ayton and Booker are off the court. I just don't understand how that can happen, considering how big of a presence those guys are as passers and scorers. And I got some pushback today on the tweet you were mentioning, because I said, you know, that's inexcusable. There's just not enough shot creation on the court right now, and I don't understand how it keeps happening. And people said, okay, well, TJ Warren has to be on the court. He's really the second best option. That's not true. TJ Warren's not a shot creator. He can create for himself, but that's inefficient. He's going to take mid-range shots. He's going to take floaters in the lane. That's not an efficient offense. He's in a 35th percentile in terms of assist percentage. You know, his go-to shots are still those mid-range shots, even though he's gotten more efficient this year. So I don't want to go on too big of a rant, but Warren's not that guy. I think if your first thing, if you're Igor, would be, is Josh Jackson working tonight? Is he effective? The answer to that today was no. He took a step back three, one of his first possessions in the game when he got switched on to Cristiano Felicio. Okay, if he's going to do that, he's probably not playable tonight. I would go to Cannon and Crawford both together on the court if that's what needs to happen. And I know you said that was a problem earlier. I think the reality is that's probably one of the better options when Booker's on the bench. So, and whenever Booker's on the bench, Ayton needs to be on the court. So I agree with you. Maybe that should have been my flagrant foul, because I had way too much to say there. But it is frustrating to see it happen every night, and it seems like it could really help the team.
I feel like we've touched on this ever since the Brand Knight trade, Brendan, but I feel like this all could be solved with just a simple acquisition of a point guard.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. But there are still, I think, some subtle ways to make it a little better. And, you know, I do feel for him, because I think the Ayton getting tired thing is quietly a really huge part of it too. And it kind of throws everything off. But before we go to the stat to watch, and I'm sure we'll dive back into some of these same problems when we get to that point, but I want to tell you guys about the Locked On NBA National Show and some of the changes going on there. I mentioned this last week, but in addition to Ben Golliver of Sports Illustrated and Sam Amick of The Athletic, two really great in-depth writers that we're adding to our weekly lineup on the Locked On NBA show. We've added Trevor Booker of most recently the Utah Jazz, an NBA player who is just going to be an, I mean, I already listened to his first show. He's going to be an awesome insight. Him and David Locke, the network chief, went through some of the biggest topics from the Warriors drama in the locker room to some of the on-court stuff plaguing different teams in Boston and Utah itself, of course, and just going to be really cool to hear his perspective. I imagine he'll be on that show probably once a week, I would assume, and he's going to start to be a guy that comes on some of the other team shows, so you might hear him on our airwaves pretty soon as well. But for now, definitely go check him out at Locked On NBA in addition to Ben Golliver and Sam Amick. Alrighty, I want to start off with the stat to watch, and I mean, the reality is it's kind of a weird one to point out because the Suns made every free throw they took tonight, but my number is 14. That's the difference in the amount of free throws that the Suns and the Bulls took. And when you're a big man who is taking 13 shots a game, even if we think maybe he could take a little more, is only getting the line twice, it's just a big problem, and it's going to make it really hard for you to get easy points every night.
Yeah, I agree with you there about the free throws, but I think the bigger disparity for me, in my opinion, is 29.4. That's my number, and it's the three-pointers. That's their percentage they made tonight, 10 of 34. They passed the 30 mark for the three-pointers. Is what Igor always wants to do in games, but hitting 29.4% of those shots, if they would have hit maybe two or three of those, I think this might have been a Suns win. So you saw guys like Ariza had an all right game from three. Warren had a good game. But Bridges was 0 of 2. Jackson 0 of 1. Crawford 2 of 6. Booker 1 of 8. Right there, that kind of tells you the story of how cold those guys were from three and 29.4%. And if they make an extra two or three of those, I think the Suns win that game.
Yeah, it definitely the Booker three-point makes is kind of the biggest gauge really night to night of how the Suns offense is going. So, I mean, they did score quite well tonight, but you know, when Booker's not making a lot of threes, it's just really tough for this team to win. And it's a combination of it kind of shows that he's not getting open off the ball and that his pull-up shot isn't working, which kind of threatens the rest of his game because he's not able to get in the lane. So 1 of 8 for him. I mean, you can pretty much bank a loss if that's the margin for him. So it's actually noteworthy too that they even got over 30, because we don't talk about it every night anymore because it was pretty routine for a while that they were getting there, but it has been a while actually. They haven't been getting above 30 attempts every night like they were in the beginning of the year.
I actually did not notice that. It might have been more in the mid to the high 20s, but that actually does kind of surprise me a little bit, just because you think they'd be chucking up 30 plus threes a game in a UR system.
Yeah, Raptors, I just clicked on a random one about the time I thought. Yeah, Raptors, 26 attempts. Let me see, Grizzlies, 32, so they barely got over. But yeah, it's been pretty consistent where they're getting up above 25. Yeah, 25 against the Nets. So yeah, keep watching. I mean, not just you, but listeners out there, because it's interesting because we kind of assume with all the guys capable of making those shots that they're going to take them and at least – try to get them up, and we'll see about the makes, but some of the nights they're not even getting the make. So I don't know really what that's indicative of, but it is interesting because Igor made such a big deal about it during the preseason.
Hey Brandon, before we get going off today's episode, I just want to touch really quick on the schedule coming up for the Suns. And I'm already looking at the reverse stands, and that's the first time I mentioned that all year. The Suns are tied for second with the Atlanta Hawks in the
because
reverse
of that Duke Gonzaga game today.
Yeah, that was a really fun game, by the way, if you got to watch it. But looking at the schedule, Brennan, Milwaukee is slaughtering the Blazers right now, so I'm really worried about how that's going to go on Friday. It might be really ugly. They play at 8:30 Eastern time at Milwaukee, then Sunday at Detroit, home against Indiana, at Los Angeles Clippers, home against the Magic, who, by the way, have a really good coach in Steve Clifford, and their defense has been playing really well lately, so that's not a gimme win. At Los Angeles versus Sacramento, at Portland versus Miami versus the Clippers, at the Spurs. That's the next 2.5 weeks, and I don't know if the Suns will be fair in any of those games, to be honest.
I think they maybe versus Orlando. I think that at Detroit it's probably winnable as well. But no, I mean, That's the problem. They're just not good right now. So they're not going to be favored until they prove that they can compete with these teams. And the reality is right now they can. If they lose to the Bulls and, you know, they barely squeak out a win against the Grizzlies and blow leads against the Sixers and Celtics, I mean, it's just they're not proving that they can win any game right now. They've been gifted so many different types of opportunities to win games, and they haven't been able to. So that it's all on them right now. You know, I think I've acknowledged that they've gotten better in a lot of different areas, and we all know there's real limitations on what this team can do with its current roster makeup. And I'm sure the next time we can debrief on some of the news going around, we'll talk about James Jones' radio interview today, where it kind of quieted any hope that there's a trade in the works, and that's a problem. But it is on them, because I think they can play at a higher level than they are right now, and they can win some of these games. I mean, the Clippers and the Kings and the Lakers, those aren't monstrous teams. I think those should be winnable, but right now I just don't have faith. So I really don't even, this is not related so much, I don't even want to go to that Magic game. That's going to be really bad, really bad basketball if it goes the way both those teams tend to play the past, 5 years.
Yeah, that's going to be a super ugly game. But before we go, is there anything else you wanted to hit on from tonight's game?
No, there's not. I agree with you. It was one of the worst ones, but I don't know if I can get around on it being the absolute worst, but definitely ugly, and you can't keep blowing leads. I mean, we've seen it 3 games in a row now, right, where they got out to a good start and still lost the game. That's just, you're shooting yourself in the foot when you're at such a talent disadvantage every night to do stuff like that.
Totally agree with you there, and it's kind of a sad state for the Suns now, 3-14. They string together some wins, but then they go on a pretty big losing streak, so the Suns might be on another one here. They've lost 3 straight now after that really impressive Spurs win. But we're not going to be recording tomorrow, guys. Tomorrow is Thanksgiving, but since you guys are listening, hopefully you are still listening, happy Thanksgiving from us at Locked On Suns, and we'll be back with you guys on Black Friday for the Bucks game.